We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events, the list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Jump by one.
No problem. Me too. All right, here we go. Salute to Knicks Nation on this Monday afternoon. The wait is over. This team has gotten much needed rest. Fan base has gotten rest after an emotional, physical round one series, and now it's on to round two, man. Eastern Conference semifinals against the Indiana Pacers. Rivalry renewed. So let's get into it, man. It's CP the Franchise. It's the Knicks Beat All-Stars. Ian Begley, Fred Katz of The Athletic, and Stephen Bonhue covers the Knicks for the New York Post. Once again, Ian Begley of The Putback with Ian Begley on SNY. Let's get to it, man. This is the Mailbag Show. Call us up, 657-383-1509, or you can hit us up on the Knicks Fan TV Discord. So let's get right to it, man. All right, fellas, how we feeling, man? I mean, Ian, I'll start with you. Just putting a bow on that round one. We kind of talked a little bit before we started the show about, you know, how grueling that was, man. What was your key takeaway from that and just seeing that locker room after game six?
Yeah, I just thought it was a lot more of the same that we saw in the regular season in terms of contributions up and down the rotation, up and down the roster. I was impressed by Jalen Brunson's ability to right his own ship after those first two games where he struggled shooting. And then after the struggles in overtime at game five, I thought he really got himself together and obviously played a fantastic game six. So his ability to correct mistakes and just in a general sense, Thibodeau pushing the right buttons by and large in round one, that was my big takeaway. One thing that I'm keeping an eye on moving forward, because they had a chance to close it out in five. They could have given him a couple extra days rest. I wonder just the attrition when that starts to set in. You're playing a game every other day so far in this series that we know. And so at some point, I wonder if that catches up to them, but we'll see how it plays out.
Fred, how about you, man? What was your takeaway after the final buzzer in game six?
Well, honestly, just an unbelievable series. I think that's one of the – it's very rare that you end a first-round series and you're like, that is a series that we are going to talk about, not Knicks discourse necessarily, but like NBA discourse as an awesome first-round series.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. First-round series, the stakes are lower and it's not as big of a deal, but there are some of them that like we still talk about. We still talk about that Celtics – that Celtics Bulls 2009 series. We still talk about that Clippers Spurs 2015 series. And I know this one didn't go seven, but every game was insane. Every game basically had one play where you're like, damn, that won the game. And just getting to cover a series that was that wild, that heart-wrenching for one team and elating for the other team. It was really high level basketball, I thought, for a first round series on both sides. it was just an unbelievable series. It was a pleasure to cover, to be honest.
Steph, how about you, man?
Yeah, I mean, the intensity was off the charts. But I will disagree that we won't be talking much about that series if they don't win round two. But, you know, I will say this. What I was waiting to see with the Knicks is whether that comfort level that they had throughout the regular season of playing a lot of minutes, playing, you know, Josh Hart, all those minutes, you know, the playing comfortable in high-pressured situations when they're trailing, when they need to pull off an offensive rebound, how that would translate to the playoffs. And it sure as hell did. So that was encouraging, because I think that's one of the biggest traits of this Knicks team is that grit, quite frankly.
The grit was on display, man. I couldn't believe, you know, the way that they were able to survive the Buddy Hield explosion in the second quarter and then being down by 10. And the Philly crowd, look, give them credit. The Philly crowd was into it. The place was thundering. You guys were in the building. I'm sure you felt it that way. But just to see them come back out of there victorious, Josh Hart, my X factor, continues to X factor in this series and in these playoffs for this team. Obviously, you know, Brunson, Thoreau, it was just great to see them come out of it. And I said this on postgame. I never seen a game where Tibbs right after the game is smiling. You know, he didn't even get to the locker room. You just saw that relief from everybody, from the players, from the fans, from Tibbs. And so just a big victory for them. But, Steph, you're right, because if they don't come out of this series victorious, you know, we may not remember this first one, man. So, you know, go into that Halliburton-Brunson storyline, because, you know, the success of one of these teams is going to be largely dependent on how well these guys play. What are you looking at in regards to these two point guards here?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, they're not going to be guarding each other. So yeah. I don't really view it as a head-to-head matchup, but it's juicy, right? I mean, even though they're friends, it feels like they've been kind of in this shadow battle where it's like, who's the best young point guard in the East? Who's going to get that all-star spot that Wally Szczerbiak was adamant about? who's going to get that Olympic nod? And it felt like, you know, these two have been competing for a couple years now, and now we get to see who is the top point guard in the Eastern Conference. And I think that's going to be an overlying storyline, and it's something that we're going to be harping on all series for sure.
Ian, were you surprised? I know Brunson was saying that he didn't care about it, and I'm sure most fans, when they see the amount of work that he's putting in, won't mind it either. Were you surprised that Team USA went with Halliburton over Brunson?
I was surprised only because I saw that he took, he being Grant Hill, he took Anthony Edwards and he took Tyrese Halliburton from the team that had played that World Cup summer. And I just thought, you know, based on the regular season, you could justify Brunson over Halliburton. But I guess he was thinking of it more so as how does this player fit with the rest of our group? And I can understand it from that point. But it was just, I guess, awkward timing, because Brunson is playing out of his mind when the roster gets announced, and he was, you know, playing so well. And so it seemed like an oversight. But I think you can look at it from both sides. But I do think Jalen Brunson's never going to say this, but I do think that's in the back of his pocket somewhere as he's preparing for this series, just the slight of the Team USA.
Yeah. Fred, how about you? Because, you know, Team USA, at least from Steve Kerr's quotes over the summer, they wanted bigger guards. They want guys that, you know, can play a bit more physical brand of basketball. But what do you think about the Brunson slight there?
Yeah, I agree with Ian. I also agree with Ian that he's never going to say it. And I also agree with Ian that, look, Jalen Brunson is a super competitive guy. When you are an unbelievably competitive and at this point unbelievably successful person in your industry and you don't get chosen to a thing that is one of the highest honors that you can get, it affects you. That's the way competition works. And I think it has affected him. I understand why they took Halliburton. He is, especially with the way that Brunson played in the World Cup, it's not like he was dominant during that Team USA run that they had last summer when they really underwhelmed during that run. And I think if he came out and he had like a great summer playing really well, that would be a little different. Halliburton's got the size advantage, which helps. Like Ian said, they wanted bigger guards. Brunson right now, I think, is the better player. I understand why they went with Halliburton over Brunson. That being said, I don't think Jalen Brunson agrees. I also don't think it's really going to affect his approach to this series. Like, I think Jalen Brunson really wants to win the series. I think Jalen Brunson really wants to be the best player in the series. I think he really wants to dominate the series. I don't think he necessarily will have this be some sort of overriding thing and be like, okay, you know what? Now I care about the playoffs. I didn't before, but now I'm into making the Eastern Conference Finals. So I don't know if it really has an effect, but it is a real thing. It is a real storyline.
Steph, when we talk about the matchups, obviously it starts with how the Pacers intend to slow Jalen Brunson down. In the last series, he saw a lot of size, a lot of wings. It was Oubre, it was Batum, sometimes Maxey at points. But in this series, you could expect Nesmith, Nebhard, Halliburton, Siakam. Now, the Nesmith experiment did not work so well for the Pacers in the regular season. What do you think Carlisle does to adjust here in terms of slowing down Jalen Brunson?
I think, I don't really know, but I think it's going to be much of the same that we saw in the regular season. And I think what we saw with Philly, it was almost like, you know what? We can't really stop Brunson. We're going to let him try to beat us and try to take out other guys. And I know, Josh Hart found himself open on the perimeter a lot during the season and he came through. But if you're Indiana and you say, all right, well, we're going to throw a lot at Jalen Brunson, that's a given. I think they have to worry about stopping other guys, because I think the difference between winning this series and not winning this series for the Pacers' perspective is how can they keep Dante DiVincenzo from going off, keep Josh Hart from going off, keep OG Anunoby from going off. And I think that is as much a part of their game plan as anything else. Obviously, the board, the rebounding is a huge element of this series, the pace. But just in terms of who they're going to match up against Jalen Brunson, I think it's going to be Nesmith and Nembhard again.
Ian, how do you see that matchup, Cohen?
Yeah, the thing that interests me is, Brendan Brown had pointed this out on SNY.TV in his write-ups of this series coming up. And, Philadelphia went with length, and that bothered Jalen Brunson in the first two games in particular. But I think he ended up, quicker decision making and trying to get to his spots despite those guys being there instead of trying to get away from them is how Brendan saw the difference in Brunson between later in the series and the first two games. So I say that to say that I think he would do well with length, going against length. And in this case, these guys are pretty similar in size to Brunson. So I think he should have an easier time kind of getting to where he wants to go and getting his shot off. That's not a slight to the defenders, and it's not a slight to Rick Carlisle, but I would just assume based on how this team has played defense over the course of the regular season, he should have a little bit of an easier time to doing what he wants to do when he wants to do it, regardless of who's defending him.
Fred, any other wrinkles you think Carlisle could throw out there?
Yeah, I mean, T.J. McConnell is one. Not a starter, but the dude is an absolute...
The Nick killer, T.J. McConnell, man.
And he's an absolute pest defensively. Yeah. The thing is that, and Ian touched on this, is that Brunson looks his worst when he's going up against length. And Nesmith has length. He's 6'5", he's got a 6'10 wingspan, he has length. But he doesn't have the length of someone like Batum. He doesn't have the length of someone like Oubre. And the other guys are smaller, peskier defenders. One thing that I wonder is going to happen is I think there's a decent chance that in order to just kind of keep Brunson out of what he wants to do, that the Pacers end up switching 1-4 with their starting lineup. And he could end up having a bunch of different guys guarding him. And Steph is absolutely right. Brunson and Halliburton are not going to be guarding each other and that they're not going to be each other's primary assignments. But I could absolutely see times where Jalen Brunson's like, all right, who's Tyrese Halliburton guarding? Is he guarding Josh Hart? Is he guarding Josh Hart? All right, great. We're going Brunson, Halliburton. No, we're going Brunson, Josh Hart, pick and rolls. The Pacers are switching, and then Brunson is just going to attack Halliburton. I really think there are going to be a lot of scenarios in this series where they just try to attack certain Pacers defenders because the Pacers have more good defenders than you would think based on their reputation. McConnell can defend, Nesmith can defend, Turner can defend, Nembhard can defend, Siakam can defend, but they also have some weak links, and Halliburton is a weak link that you can pick at. Obi Toppin is a weak link that you can pick at, and I wonder how much of this series with the Knicks, especially during the fourth quarter, is going to turn into, okay, let's find that weak link, We're going to run pick and rolls at that weak link, and then Brunson's going to attack if you get a switch, or Brunson's going to attack if he's playing too far back or whatever else. And I could see them attacking Halliburton in a lot of important moments during that series too. And in those moments, even though he's not his primary defender, like it kind of will be like, can Halliburton do some stuff against Brunson?
Yeah, and that's a great point. Great segue. And for you, Ian, you know, a lot has been made about Halliburton's his hamstring injury. Now he's got the back spasms, not as productive as he was in the first half. In the first half of the in-season tournament, you know, he was a star of the league. Now he slowed down a little bit. Is it because of playoff defense? What do you think about, you know, in terms of how the Knicks slow him down?
Yeah, excuse me. I just think of game six, right? And Dante DiVincenzo really did well on Tyrese Maxey. Maxey, 2 points in the first half. And what I found interesting afterward was DiVincenzo saying that defending Maxey, having success on the defensive end, he said, got him going on offense. And he had some significant shots in game six where he had struggled a little bit with his shot prior to that. So to me, that's where I'm starting, especially if it's going to help Dante DiVincenzo offensively. I'm starting with him on Halliburton. I'm seeing how that goes, and I'm letting the chips fall from there. And I think one of the interesting things to me is, you know, the three-point shot for Halliburton, you know, it's been erratic, I would say, a little up and down since that hamstring injury. And I'm going to reference my guy Brendan Brown again. He wondered, could you go under on those screens because Halliburton is not going to be knocking that shot down at as high a clip as he was in the regular season? Do you try that first, and then if he gets going, do you switch the way you defend the pick and roll? I think those are a couple of things that I'm looking at.
Yeah, and it's interesting because NBA University put that stat out. The Pacers with 173 wide-open three-point attempts leading the playoffs. Next best team was the Sixers at 102. Pacers had five of the top 10 in terms of wide-open threes, and Halliburton leading the pack at number one. So it's interesting, you know, whether was that the Bucks scheme or was that, you know, Halliburton kind of just being having free reign there. But I say that to say, Steph, you know, in terms of their three-point prowess, a lot has been made about their pace. Does that concern you?
Well, what would concern me if I'm the Knicks is the pick and pop with Miles Turner and Tyrese Halliburton.
Yeah.
If you're going to have Mitchell Robinson out there trying to mess around in that pick and roll, pick and pop, about a three-point line, it's probably not going to go very well for the Knicks. And maybe we'll see Precious Achiuwa. Maybe Tom Thibodeau, here's another one, maybe Tom Thibodeau will put OG Anunoby on Miles Turner.
Yeah.
So that he can deal better with that action. I think there's a lot that presents a lot of problems because we've seen throughout the year. I mean, right from the beginning of the season when Porzingis was killed him with that pick and pop because Mitchell Robinson was in the drop coverage. We know it's a Tibbs commandment to guard the paint, like keep that center back there and try to keep you know those points in the paint off the board. So I think that's going to be a huge concern for the Knicks, and how they combat that is going to be very interesting throughout this series.
Fred, your thoughts on a Halliburton-Turner two-man game. What do you think?
It's one of the best in the league. That's a super interesting idea with OG Anunoby.
Definitely.
By the way, shout out to Stan Van Gundy who gave me that idea.
Okay, shout out Stan Van, man. Absolutely.
Shout out Stan Van. Well, that's why he's a head coach in the NBA and we're not. That's a really interesting idea, and you can go Hartenstein on Siakam. I mean, look, Milwaukee tried a similar type of thing with that in that Bucks series where Milwaukee had Brook Lopez guarding Siakam and they had a smaller guy on Turner for that exact reason. They did that for the first two games of that series. The problem was Siakam then went for 36 in game one and then 37 in game two. But I think Hartenstein might be a little bit more equipped to guard a Siakam where you could hide Hartenstein on somebody else. I would be very intrigued to see if they went with something like that. I agree with you that Mitchell Robinson is not that's not his strength, being able to guard a guy in the pick and pop. I think ultimately what you end up having to do in those situations is Turner is a good shooter and he can get hot. And we saw like in that Bucks series, he went 7-for-9 from 3-1 game and he won him a game. But he is not this absolute knockdown. You have to scramble out to him every single time. And I could see the Knicks taking a strategy of, you know what, we're taking away the paint, we're taking away the driving lanes. Let's see if Miles Turner can hit him. Let's see if he can hit him tonight. And if he can hit him tonight, then hats off to him. But if he can't hit him tonight, then you run into a little bit more of a problem. One thing that I will note is that in game six of the Sixers series, they kind of changed how they were using their bigs against screens compared to game five. They were pushing their bigs up to the level of the screen more. Like, they're capable of making that sort of adjustment. They were doing it with Mitchell Robinson. They were doing it with Isaiah Hartenstein. Maybe that's something that we see more with Turner, because that there's no question that that Halliburton Turner pick and pop is dangerous as hell. They're both really good in that. Turner had a really good year, I thought. He's an underrated player because everybody thinks of him as the guy who was on the trade block forever.
Yeah.
But that guy's a good player, and he has great chemistry with Halliburton. It'll be tough. I do think we have to see Precious Achiuwa at some point in the series, because
we have to, or is Tibbs just gonna stick with seven?
It's just like
were you guys surprised even after game four? I mean, how well he played in game four of the first round. Were you surprised that he didn't even play five and six?
Yeah, I was surprised, but also not surprised, because Tibbs, man, I'm telling you, Tibbs likes his shortened rotation. He likes to rely on this many guys, and he went with it, and it worked. What are you going to do? But, you know, that's one of those subjects he's real sensitive about. We all know Tibbs is real sensitive about a few things. But one is the idea that he doesn't play enough guys. And I brought that up to him yesterday, and it was like, well, everybody has a shortened rotation now. But if you look at if you go to this series, right, and you look at the top three for minutes played from the previous series, because they both were six games, the top three are all Knicks. It's Jalen Brunson, Josh Hart, and OG Anunoby. And then you got to go to all the way to four until you get to Tyrese Halliburton and Pascal Siakam. So, you know, I think that's where the pace comes in, because the way that Tibbs is distributing his minutes, these guys are going to be running like crazy. And the Pacers are, frankly, they're a deeper team. They're going to be spreading out their rotation a lot more. So you figure with the running that's going to be going on, they're going to be having fresher legs. So that's another concern for me if I'm the Knicks.
The issue with Precious.
Freddie. Just real quick. Was it last year before the Cleveland series when you asked Tibbs about his record in first round series or in the playoff? That was another sensitive one.
That's another sensitive subject. He's got a few. He's
and Steph pokes at all of them.
Gotta respect it.
The complication with Precious too is that, so he plays, look, Precious deserved more time based on how he played. He really stepped up for them in that Philly series, but you can't play him with Mitchell Robinson in a playoff series. So it just offensively, it is just not going to work. You could play him at the four next to Hartenstein. You can figure that out. They've done that. But playing him next to Mitchell Robinson, it's just the spacing is going to be super messed up, especially if Josh Hart is going to be part of that lineup. And we have to assume Josh Hart is going to be part of that lineup, because if he weren't, that would mean Josh Hart was subbed out of the game. And I'm just assuming he won't be ever subbed out of the game ever again. And so it's going to become too untenable. So you kind of have to, if he's your eighth guy instead of Alec Burks, you're going to kind of have to rejigger your rotations so that you're only putting Precious next to Hartenstein, who's the starter. And there are ways you can do it. It's just a little bit more jumbled, a little bit more complicated. I think Burks, just because of his skill set, is a little bit easier to put in. You could just play him alongside Brunson and spell guys some minutes. But like, what does Tibbs say all the time? He's like, you have to earn it. You earn it. You come in and you earn it, and you will play if you earn it. And it's like, Alec Burks has not shown us anything, unless that dude is just Michael Jordan in practice over the last 2 weeks. Like, he has not showed us anything to actually earn it. So I'm really curious to see which way he goes. But they got to play. They got to play an eighth guy.
Burks has earned a construction permit to continue the garden project out there and throw some bricks out there. Ian, your thoughts on will he lengthen the rotation? It seems like both teams are kind of having that issue with the bench, right? I mean, they got some production. Pacers did Adam McConnell and Obi, but they also rely heavily on their starters. Knicks went seven deep after game four. What do you think?
I think he may be forced to, or I think he will be forced to at some point, just because of the foul trouble. with Hartenstein and with Robinson. I think that's inevitable. One of these games, that, and then he's going to have to go to Chua like he did in the Sixers series, and then we'll see how it goes. But if that foul trouble doesn't present itself and everybody stays healthy, I could easily see Tom Thibodeau sticking with that seven-man rotation. As Steph said, he likes his guys. He likes the guys that he trusts, that he knows he has played big minutes over the course of the regular season. And each of the guys currently in that rotation, they are that. And I don't want to say surprised. On Burks, when he did not get back in the rotation after Bogdanović hurt himself and was out for the year, I think that told you all you need to know about the idea of Burks getting back in this regular rotation. I would assume he's what Tom Thibodeau would say is a situational player, which means he's not going to play unless somebody gets hurt.
So by the way, another thing Tibbs is sensitive about is minutes restrictions. He doesn't call them minutes restrictions. He calls them minutes guidelines. So you're not allowed to ask about that either.
He does. He says it's more he actually says it's more of a guideline.
Yeah.
It's more of a guideline. Which our theory is that he stopped listening to the minutes restrictions. So the medical team had to go out to him and be like, no, this one's a guideline.
Yeah, don't worry.
Don't worry, it's a guideline, not a restriction. Not a
By the way, stop. Alec Burks not playing, you know, that says a lot to me because he's a Tibbs guy. From everything that I heard, Tibbs was a big proponent of bringing him back. So for him to be completely out of rotation now is probably – that's a telling sign.
Yeah, I think the Tibbs-Burks spark that we saw a couple seasons ago, that spark is not there between those two this time around.
Yeah, so I took a lot of heat for that one. You know, fan base is trying to bury me with that trade. And, you know, I took a lot of flack, man. But here I am, bouncing back. So to everybody in the chat, once again, hit that thumbs up button for you boys, man. CP, Ian Begley, Fred Katz, Steph Bondi, the Knicks beat All-Stars in the building. Game one tonight, 7:30 at Madison Square Garden. I'll be getting ready to head over there right after this. But the show is also a fan mailbag question, and I thought we are covering a lot of the questions that the fans have submitted, but we have a couple of wrinkles here. One from KFTV Jalen. He says, our very own KFTV Jalen says, Indy scores a lot partly because of Miles Turner's spacing, which may be an issue for Knicks big men similar to Porzingis. Which shots from Indy's players do you think the Knicks will be most comfortable giving up? Who wants to tackle that one?
I got it.
Yeah.
I think the first thing the Knicks are going to do, first and foremost, if we know Tom Thibodeau, is they are going to try to take away the paint. Everything that they do defensively will be schemed to try to take away the paint. Mm-hmm. And if they can force Indy into late clock jumpers, that's what they're going to want to do. I think they're going to care a little bit less about who's taking them and more about when they're taken and how they get there with their process. Now, look, Aaron Nesmith is a really good catch and shoot 3-point shooter, and he's really good from the corners. You don't want to give up wide open shots to Aaron Nesmith. But I do think what they're going to do is they're going to try to take away the paint first. And if guys get hot, then guys get hot and maybe they adjust from there. But ultimately, that's always where a Tibbs defense starts. It's going to start in the paint and it's going to build out. And I think that's probably what we're going to see here. What's really interesting to me is I am curious to know who OG Anunoby is going to guard because I see most people speculating he will start on Siakam. But Steph just made the point that, hey, you could try some stuff. They're not going to start like this. But if you have to, you could try to muck some things up and you could throw him on Miles Turner. Personally, I would start him on Tyrese Haliburton.
Yeah, likewise.
I would start him on Tyrese Haliburton and just be like, can he cut off the head of the snake? Because if you remember that Denver game where they killed Denver at home earlier this year and he's guarding Jamal Murray, it was like he just took Jamal Murray out of the game. And Denver couldn't get into so much of the stuff they wanted to get into because he just takes Jamal Murray out of the game. If he can just take a point guard out of the game, the head of the offense out of the game, then there is so little that they can do. He's guarded Haliburton before. He guarded Haliburton this year when Toronto played Indiana, and he did a really good job on him in that game. He has a very thoughtful process in approaching him. He's super physical. And we saw Tibbs start him on Maxey in that Sixers series, and he ended up going away from him, right? But Haliburton is a very different player in terms of cadence. I could see him going with that. How they use OG is going to be really interesting too, and we'll say a lot about what their priorities are and what they're trying to get away is what they're trying to take away as well.
If OG defends Halliburton, Fred, who do you put on Siakam?
Josh Hart.
Hart.
And you deal with the size difference, because Josh Hart is – the entire strategy is just based on the fact that Josh Hart is a maniac of a human being, and it doesn't really matter. I mean, well, Siakam has
– go ahead. No, I was going to say, this speaks to crazy versatility, OG Anunoby. I got him guarding the starting center. You got him guarding the starting point guard.
And neither of us is crazy. Yeah. We're both like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But you know what? It also – what does Tibbs say every single time we ask about OG's defensive versatility? He says it also speaks to the defensive versatility of Josh Hart.
The reason why
you can move him around is because Josh Hart could be the one guarding Halliburton, but he could also be the one – he can't be guarding – Turner, but he can guard Pascal Siakam. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen the Knicks put smalls on Siakam before. Like, they used to guard him with Quentin Grimes. Mm-hmm. We've seen them put smalls on Siakam before, and Siakam can shoot over them, and it can be a problem. But Hart is incredibly physical, and if you deem Halliburton the most important guy to take away, I think you could justify going OG there. I think you could also justify just putting OG on Siakam and going with Dante on Halliburton, going with McBride at times on Halliburton, going with Hart on Halliburton. I don't think we're going to see like one defender guarding one guy throughout the series. Tibbs is so big into, if you show the same coverage, if you show the same defender to a great player over and over, eventually that guy will figure it out. You have to shake it up. So he's going to shake it up for sure. I'm sure at times we're going to see these guys all kind of cycling through what we're discussing right now. But in terms of how they start, it's going to be really interesting. There are a lot of different ways they can go. And it speaks to the versatility of OG for sure, and also kind of the rest of their defense, which has a lot of versatility as well.
Next question coming in from Gorilla is, great job. He says, great job as always to all the parties involved in today's roundtable. Who or what are the X factors for both the Knicks and Pacers? Ian, I'll start with you on that one.
Yeah, I think one of my X factors, and I don't know how much they'll be on the floor matched up against each other, but TJ McConnell, Miles McBride, I think, you know, every high school coach who appreciates effort and defense is going to just be so excited to see these two on the court, because they have some similar traits that have allowed them to get to the level where they are. Again, I don't know how Tom Thibodeau will disperse McBride. Is it he'll sub in when TJ's in? Does he see it as a direct matchup? I don't think that'll be the case. But when those two are on the floor, can Miles McBride do what he's done for this team offensively, which was so key at different points in the Sixers series? And can he slow down McConnell, who, as you saw late in the Milwaukee series, plays a big role for Indiana and is a big part of what the Pacers do just in general, not even in their bench unit. Just he really impacts the game so many different ways. So can you neutralize McConnell while also providing the offense that the Knicks have needed if you're Miles McBride?
Steph, how about you?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the repo. First of all, it's funny that we're talking a lot about Mitch McConnell, because Josh Hart called him an annoying piece of shit yesterday. Yeah, so that was pretty funny. By the way, Josh Hart has reached the point where, like, the Charles Barkley status, where he could just say whatever the hell he wants.
He says whatever.
Nobody cares. Like, yeah, crazy.
You know what I like that you just said, Steph? You called TJ McConnell Mitch McConnell, and Josh Hart called
him. I'm all over the place.
It might have been Mitch McConnell.
I'm not in playoff mode. Mitch McConnell, wow. All right. I'm going to go with the rebounding, because when I had this conversation with Van Gundy, he pushed back on this. I think it dictates a lot of the pace, because if the Indiana Pacers are going to be leaking out, trying to get these fast break points that they're so known for, they're not going to be too careful on the defensive glass. And the Knicks can have like four possessions on one possession. And I think that changes the entire dynamic of the series. It's the reason why I think the Knicks are going to win this series, is because of the rebounding. So I think that's definitely the big X factor for me, and I think that's where the Knicks are going to dominate this.
Fred.
Damn, Steph stole my answer. Pacers, Pacers 26 in defensive rebounding. Knicks first in offensive rebounding. That's a huge one. I will deviate, and I'll say Miles Turner, because Miles Turner can get really hot from three. And if he does get really hot from three, it's going to have to shake up everything that the Knicks do. And if he doesn't get hot from three and the Knicks are able to guard exactly how they want to guard, then I think the Pacers are in trouble. So I'll go Miles Turner.
Good answers. Good answers there, man. All right. Series predictions. Ian, I'll go with you, man.
Yeah, I'm going to go Knicks in six. I think they will. They'll handle things at home. I think that, you know, we've all talked about all the different factors that play into this series. One thing I don't think we touched on a ton is Tom Thibodeau, Rick Carlisle, a very good coaching matchup. But I think, you know, the conditioning of this team, I don't know if it's going to be as impacted as we think if the Pacers play at a faster pace, because if you look at where they are in the postseason, they're middle of the pack. So I'm going Knicks in six, and I do think that pace will be a little overblown when we come back and look at this series.
Steph?
I'm going Knicks in five. And when you say okay. Thibodeau versus Rick Carlisle, all I think is two grumpy ass dudes. So we're gonna get a lot of grumpiness. That's my prediction.
Steph, I mean Fred,
I'm predicting that Tibbs is gonna listen to this podcast and make some hilarious comment to Steph to begin the next media availability. That's my prediction.
That would be awesome.
I've been saying Knicks and six. I'll stick with Knicks and six. Another thing to look out for on the offensive boards, for what it's worth, the Pacers have been using with their backup front court. They've been going with a centerless backup front court.
Yeah.
And it's been Siakam and Obi Toppin basically as those two guys. And it didn't really work during the Bucks series. And that is going to be a really interesting case study in, I just feel like one of these sides is going to get killed for it. Either Mitchell Robinson is going to get every single offensive rebound imaginable. Like the Pacers just literally will not get a defensive rebound at all. And the Knicks will score every time. They'll just keep shooting until they make a shot because Mitchell Robinson will get every miss. Or Mitch is going to struggle so much on the defensive end, going up against Toppin and going up against Siakam and having to figure out how to guard really a three-point shooter and a very perimeter-oriented player. I don't know which one it's going to be. I'm inclined to say that Mitch is just going to make him regret it on the offensive glass, but I could see it going the other way. That's another thing to follow, too, which I think will be really interesting. Those bench minutes, especially considering all we talked about with both these teams, keeping their rotations kind of shallow.
Going to be interesting indeed, man. Well, fellas, we definitely appreciate the time, man. The All-Star Roundtable. Somewhere Mark Berman is watching from South Florida, probably hating. And, you know, he's on the beach somewhere playing pickleball or tennis or something. But he's hating. He's hating right now, man. But shout out to Berman. And shout out to everybody for tuning in. Fellas, hopefully I'll run into you guys at the Garden tonight. But thanks again for your time, man. Much appreciated. Ian Begley, Fred Katz, Steph Bondi. Thanks again, fellas. Much appreciated, man.
Anytime, CP.
All right, there we go. Salute to everybody in the chat once again. Hope you guys enjoy today's show. We back at it, man. It's game one. The Garden is going to be rocking. Fans have been, you know, waiting 3 days for this team to get back to it. So definitely looking forward to it, man. Salute to all of my franchise channel members in here on the lunchtime check-in. First Lady of Sports, NYC B-Ball. Salute John Talento, always in here. Wise Guys, salute to you. Joseph Colon, appreciate it, man. Janelle Torre, John Tribovich, definitely appreciate it, man. What do you guys think in the chat? Leave us some of your series predictions. Who are your X-Factors? Leave it in the comments section. Remember that the show is available in audio podcast format. So if you did miss it, you can always catch it on all major podcast platforms, man. Also, so salute to our sponsors, man. Today's episode is brought to you by our good friends at Jordan Craig, man. Catch up on Jordan Craig, the latest in urban streetwear. Shout out my guy Junius Valentine and the good people over there. Jordan Craig always keeps me styled and laced, and also have styled a number of NBA players, man, including former Nick Emmanuel Quickly. And for you guys at home, Jordan Craig is always taking care of us, man. Go to jordancraig.com. Use our code KFTV20 for 20% off plus free shipping. You can't lose. And Jordan Craig is also going to be giving you guys an opportunity to win a $200 shopping spree. No holds barred. You can't lose. Go to JordanCraig.com. Sign up on the main page, on the landing page, where you are going to announce the winner soon. Couple other tidbits here while I still got you guys. Yes, the watch party, of course, man. Sucker Punch is popping, man. Sucker Punch is popping. So make sure that that you guys head over there. Go to KFTVWatch.com to get your tickets. And yeah, man, it's gonna be rocking. Sucker Punch, you know the vibes. We will be there. KFTV will be there. I'll be headed over to the Garden, but Sucker Punch will definitely be on and popping. And so make sure you guys check that out. Also, I got to prep. I got a surprise interview at 5 o'clock that I'm gonna be releasing. Man, I can't really, you know, unveil. I can't really give y'all too much. But I'm just saying, come back here at 5 o'clock. I have a surprise interview for you guys, man. So, K-Dot, salute. John Altore says, have him feeling quick will make his way back to the Knicks in the future. Well, it won't be anytime soon. He's going to get that bag, as he should. And, you know, good for Quick. Quick did go to game six. So, you know, he was locked in there. Who else we got in here? Rivalry renewed, Brandon Hunt. Yep, rivalry renewed. Absolutely, man. So, salute to Brandon Hunt. Let me make sure I have my stuff here. Yep, watch party. There you go. Game one watch party at Sucker Punch. Go to KFTVWatch.com to get your tickets. And looking forward to having y'all there. Play-by-play tonight. You know we got it. CK2K will be on the boards. Play-by-play is every night. So you guys know where to come to for all of your content during this series, man. That is the number one show for the fans by the fans. So we will have that. And that will be brought to you guys by Underdog Fantasy, of course. So that'll be there. I got a lot going on. I got to get it ready for this interview. I got to do it at 1:30. It'll be dropping at 5. Then I got to shoot out to the Garden. Got some more meetings. Got to meet up with some fans. I already talked to my guy, Anthony Donahue. We're going to be out there with the Hoop Bus and whatnot. So it's popping. Eric L. Beats in the chat says, see y'all tonight at Sucker Punch. Our resident DJ, DJ Eric L. Beats, will be in the building. Looking forward to that. And we ready, man. I'm ready for this season, this series. But yeah, like I said, man, for those of you itching for more content, we got Game of the Week preview. We did that yesterday. I put up my segment from PIX 11 here in New York. I did a quick preview with them yesterday, last night. We got the Big Perk interview. That's still good to go. Go check out the Big Perk interview. My interview with Chris Herring of Blood in the Garden, the story of the 90s Knicks. Check out that interview with Chris Herring, man. That was a good one. So we got content for you guys for days. So just go back in the channel. Go to the main channel. Go on videos. And remember that they separate the videos by live and video. So if you go on the main channel and you can't find like a live stream, you got to click on the live tab. So that might confuse some of you guys a little bit. It might confuse you a little bit. You know what I mean? So just in case you guys get a little confused there, you know, I'm just letting you guys know that. So make sure you guys tap in. Okay, Jamel Moore says, Sucker Punch, where it's at? 344 3rd Avenue, man. You guys got phones? Google it up, man. 344 3rd Avenue in NYC, man. Sucker Punch NYC, man. Easy to get to. Philly was epic. Absolutely, yeah. Philly was great, man. Who, Flizzy Fletch, who I got in Drake versus Kendrick? I'll be honest with you guys. I don't know anything going on with that. I don't know. I've been so locked in with Knicks and NBA coverage and just, you know, making sure we bringing you out the heat. We bringing out heat, man. We just brought you the round table all-stars, the Knicks beat all-stars. Drake and Kendrick, they're good to go. I'll catch up on that when I got time. You know what I'm saying? I'm focused on what we need to focus on right now. It's orange and blue skies, baby. You know, I don't care what Kendrick and Drake got to say. It ain't more important than what's popping on the number one show for the fans by the fans. So I'm locked in. When I'm not on this, I'm family time. So I don't got much time to spare. I'll give them a minute. Maybe when I get in the car on the way to the Garden, I'll give it a listen. But I can't really lock in right now. You know, I got to lock in on the Knicks, man. You know, who else we got in here? John Altore, where would we be without KFTV? Well, it's a family show. It's a community affair. And so everybody is doing their thing. You guys support. You hit the like button, hit the share button, subscribe to the channel. Our guests come in, they give you valuable insights. We bring in guys from the beat, give you the insights from inside the locker room. I'm just a conductor, man. I just put it all together for you. That's it. That's it, man. Salute to Wise Guy. Yeah, I'll catch up on Drake and them later, man. It's too much. You know, one guy dropping a diss this day, another guy dropping a diss this day. Then now the new thing is you need, you know, the hieroglyphics. You need a translator to interpret what everybody's saying here. So now I got to listen to it. Then I got to go on YouTube and find out what is this guy really talking about. Now we got to break down bar for bar and interpret everything. Come on, man. I'm getting too old to keep up, man. Now we need the translator to break down everything that Kendrick was saying in his bars. Oh, man. Yeah, I'll get into it, though. It is good for the game, though. I think it's much needed. If these guys are going to claim to be the best, do it, man. Jay and Nas did it. You know, a couple of the greats did it. LL was in some classic battles. Ice Cube, you know, classic battles. Like, yeah, get to it, man. Competitive energy. That's what we need. That's what the game needs. It's a whole lot of trash music out here. So I would, I like that. I like that these two guys are not afraid to mix it up and put their brands on the line here. Okay. All right. So that's that, man. I'm going to get ready for this 1:30 joint. You guys have a great afternoon. Anybody pulling up to the garden, holla at your boy. I will be there. And yeah, another beautiful day, beautiful Monday, man. Hope it is for you guys, wherever you guys are at in the world. Lock in. Get your merch. K at New York versus the world. The restock. Playoff merch restock is on the way. So make sure you guys are tapping into that. And speaking of which, one thing I always appreciate when you guys purchase the merch is that you share it. You know, share it. Show people, hey, man, that you're supporting number one show for the fans by the fans. So here is this guy. Shout out to him on the YouTube. He goes by the name of Outram. Cop four shirts, all different sizes. The whole fam supporting KFTV CB the Fanchild. Let's go. Salute to him, man. And when I tell you it's a family show, it is a family show, man. So shout out to everybody copping playoff merch for the entire family. It's just that type of time. We appreciate the support. And we'll see you guys later, 5 o'clock, and then play-by-play and post-game. We here all night. Keep it locked. Number one show for the fans by the fans. Like, share, subscribe. Have a great day, guys. Peace.